Hola, buenos dias. Mi nombre es Pastor Vicente. They don't realize that pastor, having the name pastor doesn't mean anything. They called me El Pastor. Doesn't that sound like El Jefe or something like that? El Pastor. So, tell me something. How long do you think you could last on this little meal here? Gotta keep the receipt for expenses. Seriously. How long do you think you could last? Like, if you ate this every day for, you think you could last a week? I got a pretty tough metabolism. My saying is, you know, a hot enough furnace, anything burns. I run enough that I could pull this off. How long do you think you'd last? 2 weeks? A month? Anyone think they can last 2 months eating this? And I'm not just talking like once in a while. I'm talking breakfast, lunch, and supper. This. 2 months. Let me change a little bit. What would happen if you took the Big Mac and you took the meat and the lettuce and the other meat? Oh, it's kind of stuck together. Okay, there we go. Okay, so we have a little bit of sauce with a bun and another bun and some fries and a Coke. How long do you think you can last on that? Breakfast, lunch, and supper. 3 days? I think I could do a week. Does anyone know the joke about scurvy? You know, when you get scurvy, your teeth get loose because you've had no nutrients in your body whatsoever. I think in about 2 weeks, my teeth would start getting loose and, you know, falling out. The reason I tell you this is because this was the best metaphor I could come up with for what they eat every day in rural Guatemala. The nutritional equivalent of this. No meat. No vegetables. Basically a little bit of carbohydrates with a little more carbohydrates and a little bit more carbohydrates. How long do you think your kids could last on that? Think of the number of sick days you'd be taking because your kid can't fight off a cold. Flu season would just wreak havoc in your household, wouldn't it? Anything that happens anywhere, even in the vicinity of your family, you're all getting sick. Why? Because that's what you eat. Breakfast, lunch, and supper. It's tragic, isn't it? How do they even live on this? You don't have as much energy as we have. The idea of going for a long run yesterday, you know, I'm blessed to do it. There's no way. You don't have nearly enough energy to do that. You're small. You're weak. This is what chronic malnutrition looks like. You eat this every day of your life. For your entire life, that's what happens. In the first 100 or first 1,000 days of your life, including the 9 months in the womb, if you don't have nutrients, your body can't actually physically grow big and strong. And it's even worse because your brain needs a tremendous amount of nutrients to grow healthy and strong, to actually physically grow so that it works properly. If you eat this every day of your life for the first 1,000 days, you're doomed to what they call mental stunting. It means your brain is physically not fully developed. It's like having the worst learning disability, and there's not a teacher in the world, there's not an individual program in the world that can help you. You physically do not have the capacity to learn, to be as smart as the people around you. Everyone knows the problem, and there's nothing they can do about it. And the problem is, this doesn't just last for one person. If you're a mom and you eat this every day of your pregnancy, your children will be feeding off that same lack of nutrients. they will not have the nutrition and the nutrients to be able to grow healthy and strong. And so that generation gets a little worse than the generation that is their parents. And then the next generation gets worse, and the next generation gets worse, and it gets worse and worse and worse until you have an entire population on the brink of disaster. That's chronic malnutrition. And you look fine, or at least you seem fine. You're all in proportion. Corey, can I just jump off the order for a second? There's a slide of two kids, one smaller, one larger. The kids on the right are genetically Mayan, so they're genetically Guatemalan, born in the States, eating healthy, nutritious food. The kids on the left were born in Rio Azul, or the area of Guatemala, like Rio Azul. They're the exact same age. They're almost a foot shorter by 9 years old. A foot shorter. And what you don't see is their brains aren't developed. Their bodies aren't developed. This is what chronic malnutrition does. Thanks, Corey. It's the highest rate of chronic malnutrition in Central America, the fourth highest in the world. And that includes all the African countries. Because this has been happening for generations. This is what they're eating for generations. It's all because they don't have enough nutritional diversity. As my mom used to say, they aren't eating their deep leafy green vegetables. You know, the gross ones, broccoli, lettuce, cabbage, even cauliflower. It's not green, but hey, what the heck? It's nutritious. Because they don't have them. It's like they're living in a town that has one restaurant. And that restaurant serves one thing, breakfast, lunch, and supper. It's that. What would you like for breakfast? Well, I'd like some salad and some fruit. Well, no, you're going to have that. And the entire time we were there, I saw two carrots in the grocery stores of all the stores that we saw. Two carrots. They don't even have access to this. Even if they wanted it, they don't have access to it. And that's where we come in. Because the fix is actually ridiculously easy. Chronic malnutrition isn't like Ebola. It's not contagious. You don't catch it from someone because they sneezed on you. It's a simple one. And we don't need some scientist in a thing trying to create a vaccine that will, you know, save the day. It's not like swine flu or something like that. It's basically going, we need more nutritional diversity. We need to eat deep leafy green vegetables. Because if we don't, kids like Juana, the little girl that sponsored from the kids downstairs, she misses school. And when we say misses school, think 10 out of 30 days a month. Try passing your exams if you've missed a third of your classes every month. We're a community that looks at a problem like this, and we don't say, I wish someone would do something about that. I hope that gets taken care of. We look at it and say, how do we fix this thing? How do we help? How do we get involved? And so we partnered with a community or a little organization called FH in a community, Rio Azul, in a project we're calling Veggie School. Now, Veggie School isn't a program like the ones I saw over there. It's not a handout. I saw soup programs for kids that lasted, you know, like 9 months, and then nut butter for kids that last 1 year and 2 months, and all these programs that are kind of like quick fixes, but they're not the long-term solution. They're kind of things that non-government agencies here in North America go, we want to help, and then they run out of funding and the help goes away. And instead of things being great long-term, sure, there's good in the short-term, but long-term, it just wrecks it. It says to the people, you can't solve this. You basically live or die on our whim. Jamie was telling us he saw rafters for a greenhouse leaning next to a guy's house. He says, what's that? Oh, it's a greenhouse. Why are they there? I said, well, some government agency gave it to my buddy, but he couldn't afford to put the covering on it. So he sold it to another guy, and he sold it to me, but I can't cover it, so that's pretty helpful, huh? It just says to them, you can't fix this problem. You're not strong enough. And that's not how Friend Church rolls. We don't want to disempower people. We want people to realize that they can do it. And we don't want it to be about us. We don't want it to be about, hey, what feels good for us? We want it to be about what helps them and what helps them long term. So we wanted to do something different. So again, we partnered with this organization called Food for the Hungry, who work hand in hand with the Guatemalan people. In fact, they're from the area. They grew up there. People like Alberto and Rochelle. They're the people who run the NABA office, which is that area. They live there. They grew up there. You'll hear more stories about them. Danny and Diego and Juana. Now, just as a side note, Juana is a very popular name. Not like Vince, like popular. I think we met a dozen Juanas. So if you get them mixed up, which one I'm talking about, don't worry. I'll give them numbers. This is Juana number one. But she grew up there. She teaches in what's called the Cascade Group. These are people's friends and family and neighbors. It's going, how do we help ourselves? Because this isn't about some group like us coming in from the outside and giving them handouts. This is Guatemalans helping themselves. That's what Veggie School is about. People on the ground who live in the communities, who understand the culture, but who believe that Guatemalan people can be healthy. Their children can be healthy. They believe that they can change their world. And so with their input and a plan from the larger organization, they came up with this plan that's really simple. It's not just going to be there today. It's not going to be there tomorrow. It's not going to be there just next year. It will be there for generations. We're starting something that will be there forever. Because they do it. We help a little bit. But this is Guatemalans helping themselves. So the name Veggie School, everyone told me, Vince, why'd you call it that? That's such a not sexy name. Anyone sexy? Veggie School? Eating your veggies, isn't that sexy? Going to school, sexy? I'm never known for my sexy titles. I'm never good at that. When I think they're sexy, they're not. But I name them for a particular reason. Because for me, what's important is to say what it is. And this just isn't about vegetables. If it was just about vegetables, that would be easy. But it's about educating a people group to do things differently, to behave differently. Sometimes people say, well, why don't you just take a helicopter and drop a whole bunch of vegetables in the middle? And, you know, as you're flying away, you can see them, friends, church, friends. You know that? Kind of feel good to do that, wouldn't it? And that would last all of what? 2 days? Maybe three? But if we educate them, if we send them to, we're going to call it school. It looks a little different. If we can get them thinking differently, train them in skills, this is something that they can train their friends and neighbors and their kids and their grandkids. This is something that will happen and last forever. And that's why Veggie School is so exciting. If you have a hurricane in an area and all their services go offline, you send in food. You take a helicopter, you fly in food. That's what you do. It's called relief work. But Guatemala is not dealing with that kind of stuff. They're dealing with a lifetime, generations of eating the nutrition equivalent of this every day, all day. And so we need to do things a little bit differently. And so that's why we did Veggie School. The interesting thing about Veggie School is this. It's not about us teaching them something. Because even that, people say school will send down teachers. No, we don't get it. We don't speak the language. We don't. In fact, they speak Ashiel, which gets translated to Spanish for us, which gets translated to English. Have you ever had a conversation that gets translated three times each way? It's not really that useful. Because you're thinking about, you know, what you're going to do for supper by the time they answer the question of, how are you? You know, it gets translated. Then they say that it gets translated back. Fine. Oh, good. So what we need is we need people who speak the language on the ground, teaching them that they can teach themselves. They can teach themselves to grow things that they've never grown before. We teach them, or they teach themselves, that they're worthy of having healthy foods. Even that's a huge shift for them. They teach themselves that it's worth it to carry water for 30 minutes to water their gardens. Anyone have a spare 30 minutes in their life to carry water to their gardens? That's a big deal. They teach themselves that growing healthy vegetables is more important than the weaving the cloth that they're going to sell in Kotzel and make some money. Pedro, a guy we met in one of the towns, we called him Chuck Norris because there's 100 Pedros. And it's kind of hard to remember which one's which. And I was trying to explain to him, I want to videotape him and I want him to be like to act something. And he couldn't figure it out. So we were like, we want you to be like an actor. You could tell he wasn't getting it. And I was like Chuck Norris. He's like, ah, Chuck Norris, yeah. So we called him Chuck Norris. But we're trying to explain to Chuck Norris, it's more important to grow these vegetables than it is to weave the fabric that's going to sell in the market, that's going to make some money for him. That's a big shift, isn't it? And the thing is, they're not going to see the results tomorrow. Tomorrow they'll feel a full stomach eating this. Healthy food is going to be in their children's lifetimes. It's a result that'll happen years from now. We all know that moderate exercise, and I say moderate exercise for a reason, because sometimes I'm not moderate. Moderate exercise is good for heart health, right? Long term, this is good for when you're older. How many of you are sweating into the oldies? It's good for you, right? In 20 years or whatever, when you know my heart starts to falter, it'll be good that I was exercising. Even for us, first world, we care more about what's going to happen today and tomorrow than what's going to happen 20 years from now. So it's about them teaching each other, hey, we're going to give a little bit now so our children are healthy long term. That's a huge shift. And that's why the education piece is so important. So we started off the trip. We met with the country director. So the guy who runs FH in all of Guatemala, his name is Julio, and his head of statistician, it was Ignatius? No, Ignacio? Do you remember what his name was? What was it? Edsy? Okay, his name was Edson, sorry. In my head it was Ignatius. Sounds a bit better Ignatius though, doesn't it? So Edson was there. And we basically sat him down and said, okay, in the last year we've implemented Veggie School, how's it going? And coming off of last year, we were a little bit... Because last year, the impact we saw, it kind of had flatlined. And I remember telling you guys, like, we sat in this meeting last year going, it hasn't really changed. And we were bummed out. So I was kind of sitting there with a little bit of apprehension going, oh, geez. We took this risk. We invested in Veggie School. We did all this stuff. And now if this thing comes out flat, oh, geez. And that's when he said something that, he said, we're winning again. And we're not just winning, we're crushing it. You see that second line down? That's the measure of stunting of kids in all the area that FH deals with in Guatemala. So these are probably some of the worst chronic malnutrition areas in this entire country. That first line, starting at 2010, is what we've been able to do to now, to 2013. About a 1% shift every year. We basically have been able to match what the government of Guatemala has been able to do with all their resources. And as we started implementing Veggie School and all the other stuff kicked in, we dropped 6%. We have never, ever seen numbers even close to that. You aren't getting this. This is like the grand slam, home run, touchdown, hole in one, you name whatever metaphor you want of development work. This is a massive win. We're outdoing the government. We're outdoing foreign governments. We're outdoing anything that everyone's been able to do. We're seeing a 6% difference in the size of children. 6% children are no longer considered stunted in the last year because of the Veggie School that you all were a part of. You're still not getting it. Yes. We are actually literally changing the country. The water we took is changing them physically. We can measure them, and they measure differently than they've ever measured before. Talk about a return on investment. We sent down $21,000. Other groups around the country sent down money in the States as well. A 6% shift in people's size. When the guy told us, he was like, kind of a bit nervous. You could tell he was like, these numbers aren't finalized. This is the midterm thing. But you could tell the excitement and the passion in him was just bubbling over. He's like, we're winning. We didn't really realize this. We had been pushing breastfeeding. So the top line right there is the number of women breastfeeding up to a certain age. Problem is, we had huge numbers, right? But if you're eating nothing but this as a mother and you're breastfeeding your children, what nutrients are they getting? It seems like veggie school has been the missing link. It's the thing that shifted everything. So we're winning again. This thing's working. So here's the deal. We raised money for RioZool to get that 6% change. And they need a bunch of time to implement this. It's not like we can do in Canada where we can shut the entire town down, send them all to school for a week, you know, launch everything in. This doesn't happen like this in third world countries. You can't just take the week off. Who's going to, you know, take care of your corn crops? Who's going to take care of your children? So what they do is they have groups that train, and this thing kind of gets spread out through the town. It keeps growing and growing and growing. So this isn't even the entire town doing veggie school yet. This is just a portion of them. So they're going to need a couple years to implement this. And when I say a couple years, think a couple years in third world country terms, like 2 years-ish, meaning 2 to 16 years kind of thing. You never know in third world countries. Things change all the time. But we're going to give them a bit of time to implement this. We're not going to forget about them. We're just going to give them a bit of time. And while we do, while they have the time to implement this thing and to get more and more people in their community, because really what they're doing is positive peer pressure. Wow, your kids are looking pretty healthy. They're looking over the fence. What's that? Oh, that's my garden. What's that all about? Oh, let me tell you about it. You know, next year they're growing their own garden, right? But we need time for that to happen. So instead of sitting on our hands and going, yay, 6%, we're changing the world. Okay, let's take a year off. I say we take that 6% and bring it to another community. Because really, if we see water that's working that well, why don't we just keep it going? And so today I want to introduce you to a new part of the Friends Church family. It's a little town just down the road from RioZool. It's a little town called Shonkaw. It's spelled X-O-N-C-A, and it said Shonkaw. It's a beautiful little town. It's kind of tucked way up in the mountains. They already have a little health clinic. They're super proud of it. It's got a room, so think maybe like, actually about the size of this stage is their health clinic. Maybe a little bit bigger. Proud of it. They came together as a community to build it. You go up the town, the town's like on this really steep ridge, and you walk up a set of stairs. On the top, they have a school room, or school classrooms and playground. These kids are just going crazy, loving life. Have you ever seen a kid in Guatemala with a soccer ball? They are happy. Over the edge, it drops off like this. They have no net. Did you notice that? They have no net there. Every time they kick it off the edge, they have to run down the mountain, pick up the soccer ball, run it back up. Anyways, not sure who planned that one. But it's a beautiful town. Friendly. People, we're walking down, people are yelling. What's the line they say? It's to say hello? Kiche? Kache. It's a shield for hello. These little kids, kache. And Tanya would spend some quality time talking with them in her 4 lines of a shield that she knew. They're passionate. You see the groups of people cleaning out roads with machetes, cutting down, you know, as the lush stuff grows in. Over top of the town goes like this. There's a big bowl, and it's just green. We asked them one time, what are you guys good at? They said, we can grow anything. And they can. It's fantastic. I sat down with their leaders, and I've sat down with a lot of leaders in Guatemala, and it was incredible. So that's me. No, they're not kneeling down. See all the people, the height they are? I was like a giant in that entire country. So the women on the right, it's called a Cascade Group. This is one of the things that's part of Veggie School. So the men sat down, and it's usually only the men. In this one, the women sat down with, and I was like, okay, what's that all about? So I started asking them, and the El Pastor has to ask the mayor, because it's all very status-driven, how you guys doing, you know, what's the vision for your town? And the women kept answering, and the men were silent. And I kept thinking, oh, I must be asking the wrong questions, because, like, these guys are not. So I said to the translators, like, ask him any question he'll talk about for anything more than a yes-no answer. And again, the women answered. And it took me a little while. We were walking away a little while later, and at first I kept thinking, something is wrong with this town. And then I realized, we've never seen a town with a group of women empowered enough to speak in front of the leadership. These are towns driven by men. But Xiongkaw is like the unofficial women's lib capital of all of rural Guatemala. Because these cascade groups are going, and they're not talking for the sake of talking. They're like, we want our children to be healthy. And we will do whatever it takes to make sure that our kids are growing up healthy. And the mayor would say, yeah, what she said. You just tell, if I say anything against that when I get home, I'm going to get my butt handed to me. Even that, to see a group of women that fired up, that's Veggie School in action. It's incredible. Tanya and I actually got in to sit in one of these cascade groups, not with the leadership, but when they sat on their own and got their training. So I wanted to invite her up here just to share a little bit about what does it look like to be in a cascade group in rural Guatemala. This is Tanya Kaszowski. Everyone give her a hand. Good morning. I told her to make sure to keep the mic right on her chin the whole time, so if it seems a bit awkward.
I'm going to talk with my hands, so this might be fun.
So how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
How's it feel to be back in Canada?
It's a tough transition.
It is, isn't it?
When you're in such severe poverty but beautiful people, mm-hmm. and then you come back to the Stampede.
There's like people mooning you on the street, and you're like, what is going on here? I just, taking water out of the tap. It's such a treat after you've been, you know, worried about what's coming, what's in the water everywhere.
Flushing your toilet paper.
Oh, yeah. Did you know in Guatemala, when you're finished your business, you wrap up your toilet paper and you put it in the garbage can. Isn't that disgusting? So whenever I get to flush it, I'm always like, oh, okay, good, it's gone. So we sat in a cascade group. Mm-hmm. What was your feeling? You're a feeling person. Just tell me the feeling as you sat in that group.
Well, during the week, I really wanted to, as we were hearing about this cascade group, I really wanted to find a time that we could actually go sit and join these women and see what was happening, because we were hearing about these women really being empowered and really wanting to make changes. Mm-hmm. So we went into, it was kind of a dark room, not a lot of light at all.
Nope.
Just sort of the sun coming in, and I don't know if you have any pictures of that, but and they were mopping the floor, because they do have a lot of pride in what little they have. Mm-hmm. And as the women slowly started coming into the room, you know, a few little conversations, and it was a little bit awkward, and maybe it was us sitting there videoing, and who are these two gringos hanging out in there in the special cascade meeting. And as the room just started to fill, you could just sort of feel the energy, like excited to learn, excited to build community and care for each other and check in with each other and see what was the next thing that they were actually going to be learning about in that day.
And one in number 15, yeah. I'm not sure which one it is, she's part of a veggie school, and she came up there and started teaching them about breastfeeding. It's really important that I was there and learned all about that. So they were going into
breastfeeding now.
I know a lot about breastfeeding now. But they were basically going through everything, like things like, if your baby's upset, don't shake it to calm it down so you can breastfeed it.
Yeah. Well, even for them, like the women work very hard there, and sort of the guys. But often the women are the ones that are carrying the wood on their back, so they have sort of this cloth around their head and this stack of wood that they're carrying up the hill, and they'll be doing that as they're breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. So what they were talking about was about when you're doing that, that's not the time for hygiene reasons to be breastfeeding. So just even that, like mm-hmm. for moms or dads here, if you think about that, how what we're learning about taking care of our kids, that mm-hmm. we wouldn't even think about the hygiene of having a stack of wood on our back as we're walking up a hill and having to take care of our kids.
Exactly.
So the learning was Yeah, just different, right? In third world country, what they're looking at and how this means to them.
And it didn't feel like a classroom to me. Like, in my mind, a classroom is like the teacher sits at the front and everyone sits outside and like this. No one's said anything back to me, or at least not very many of you said something. This is kind of what it feels like in a Canadian classroom. That's not what it felt like there.
No.
In fact, at one point, the teacher pulled out a white mannequin baby. Yeah. And that's when things...
Huge baby.
Like, think... Girl party, 3 bottles of wine in. That's kind of how this whole thing went down at that point.
Yeah, it was very apparent to me. It could have been a group of my friends sitting around, just, you know, slowly kind of everybody kind of getting into the evening or into the night or maybe into a glass of wine. And then the laughter starts. And it's just like these women, like gut laughing, like hiding behind each other, like peeing themselves laughing. They're just enjoying each other, laughing at each other, encouraging each other, and just the community. Like, yeah, I mean, we're sitting there laughing. I don't even understand what they're saying, but there's so much joy in the room. It was, and then they're walking out and their hands on each other's back.
Yeah.
And just, it was pretty magical moment to just be in this place and learning such simple things that we take for granted, and to know There's so much joy and happiness there, and they're just like, it was like a group of my friends sitting around just like gut-wrenching laughing about this white baby that they're trying to figure out how to breastfeed. So
one of the things I was so struck by is it's easy to teach someone to plant a vegetable. You know, this is how deep you put in the corn and this, or the what were they, broccoli, and this is how you tend it, and this is, you know, if this happens then this. That's easy. But how do you teach a group of people to care about themselves? To say that they're worthy to have this happen in their lives? And after you saw those women leave, you went, that's how you do it. Mm-hmm. So it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It was really obvious to me that the community that was being built, so the Cascade Group is for education, and we're obviously very interested in what they're doing with the vegetables that they're growing and how they're teaching that. Mm-hmm. But it was obvious to me because then they learn, these 12 women learn in this Cascade Group, and then they go to certain areas in their little neighborhoods, and they go and teach the other moms or the other people in the homes about what they're doing. So they would have taught about breastfeeding, or they'll now go teach about how to grow vegetables, how to eat healthier, how to, you know, they're focused on selling, if they're selling vegetables, selling to pregnant women. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, in that community, the education that's happening there, and it's just about caring for each other and enjoying each other and community relationships, sharing each other's story, and truly creating an impact in their world.
Yeah.
Very much.
It was incredible. Thanks, Tan.
Thank you.
I made sure I dismissed Tanya before we went to Lady Angelica, who is from the community, or from the Cascade Group. So her job is to take a region of Rio Azul, teach what she learned in the Cascade Group to those women. So we went to her house to just talk to her. And so we had a tortilla making contest. I believe I won. It's really hard to make tortillas. Anyone ever made tortillas? They look really simple. They're not. Anyways, it was fascinating. We later learned that, yeah, the Cascade Group prioritizes vegetables. There's not enough right now for them to all eat them. So what they do is they send them to pregnant mothers and mothers who just had young kids to make sure that they get the nutrition. So not only is it that they understand nutrition and what Veggie School is about, they're caring about each other and taking care of each other. So it's amazing. So that's the first arm of Veggie School, Cascade Groups. And again, Sean Kaw, I've never seen a Cascade Group as excited and as motivated as that group. They were fantastic. But there's another part that Veggie School helps, and that's the financial part. Because how do you start a garden when you have no money? And so the way it works is, when they say, we'd like to start a garden, we pay for 75% of the seedlings that they get. We pay for 75%, but they pay for 25%. There's never any handouts in this. There's always, they have skin in the game. And after the first year, they use some of the vegetables, but most of them right now they sell. And so then they pay for half the vegetables. And then the third year, they pay for 3/4. And by the fourth year, they pay for the entire thing. We met with one lady. And again, her name was Juana. We were asking about her garden. She says, this is my garden. This is mine. And not in a sense of, it was in a sense of, I own this. This is my pride. I did this. There's a pride in her voice. A sense that I can do this. they can help themselves. That's why we make sure we have skin, or they have skin in the game. So Shangkau is a beautiful little town, and the people are optimistic, and they have some challenges. They live up on the top of a mountain in a remote area, and for very good reason. So I want to invite Jamie and Tyler Buchan, dad and son who came on the trip with us, to come up here and just share a little bit of what they saw. Can you give them a round of applause? Welcome, guys. He's a bit nervous. I thought I'd just loosen him up a little bit. Okay, so Tyler's our resident anthropologist and sociologist. So we had like whole classes around sociology. And one of the things he taught me in this trip, because this isn't my background at all, that geography impacts culture. Can you just speak about that a little bit?
Any kind of major geography will impact the way that you live your life, because the crops you grow, you know, perhaps you can harvest all year round. Mm-hmm. It'll encourage an ethic of constantly, oh, what are you doing? What am I doing right now to grow my crops? Whereas other crops might be seasonal and where you'd, you know, work real hard when it is, but you need to, it's all about preparation for the future, not about thinking always in advance.
So really what it comes down to is where you live, the geography of wherever you live, especially in rural areas, very much impacts your culture. It changes everything of what you do. And so one of the things, if you can just hand the mic to Jamie, one of the things that Shangkau, the name is to be separate. So basically it's in the middle of nowhere. It's up on the top of a mountain. And the reason is they wanted to get away from something. And what they wanted to get away was from the Civil War. It lasted about 36 years, and it ravaged them. Now, Jamie spent probably the most time of all of us just talking to people about their story, and you wanted to share just a quick story today, one of the ones you heard.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that was really impactful is, you know, we go there, and we're there for like 1 week or even 1 day in some communities. And these FH people are there 365 days a year, and they don't get enough credit for what they do because they're living their passion. And so I found a lot of stories in the past, and I looked in all different types of places, and right underneath, right in our midst, there was an FH worker named Alberto. Mm-hmm. And he's a 40-year-old man, and we saw him one of the pictures here. He's about 4'8", 4'9". So he definitely grew up malnutritioned. Anyway, during the war, 48 years old, the soldiers came to his village, and they had to go into the mountains to hide. And there he was at 8 years old. His dad and a few other men from the village took up arms to protect the villagers. And he met with the soldiers, the military, who were searching for them to actually slaughter them, to kill them, genocide. And Alberto's dad was with the military, and he was asked to prove his loyalty to the military. And to prove that, he had to slaughter a family, to kill an innocent family, to show his loyalty and dedication. And his dad refused, as did some of the other men, but one of his uncles did not refuse. He actually killed a family to protect his family. So later on, the military, they're with them, the military and them were going through the woods, through the jungle, and they went across a river, and they sent Alberto's dad and some of the other fathers who resisted in killing other families. And halfway across the river, they opened up fire. And they slaughtered them, too. And Alberto's father was washed way down the river, never to be seen again. Body was never recovered. And of course, Alberto grew up with my father. Anyway, now, Alberto works with FH for over the last 10 years, giving back to that same community for 10 years, 365 days a year, making a difference in those people's lives. And It's those people with food for the hungry that make the difference. And those kind of stories that have the biggest impact. And this is not a story about, it's about love and perseverance and growth and giving back and even forgiveness. And I got a dozen stories like that, and there's thousands more. So, anyway.
Thanks, Jamie. Guys, let's give him a round of applause. Thanks, you guys. Thank you. Sometimes you're on the top of a mountain going, why do you live here? And then you hear a story like that, and you go, this was the only place safe. And Shankaw is one of those towns. It's in the middle of nowhere because it was the only place safe. And we heard story after story of towns. And this isn't warfare, soldiers killing soldiers. This is soldiers coming in, killing women, children. Some of them, they didn't want the animals to live. They lit the houses on fire. They lit the crops on fire. When I say civil war in Guatemala, that's what I want you to picture. Genocide. And so for Shankaw, 15 years later, the town was established in 1999. So 15 years later, to be strong and to see, we can do this. We can stand up for ourselves. In the face of that past, it's incredible the strength that they have. It's funny. I feel like a proud father bringing home my child for the first time and showing him off. I share with you guys Shankaw, a town that we got to hang out in. We got to bring the story of Friend Church to. And a town that I want to become part of the Friend Church family. I want to bring that 6% impact of Veggie School to Shankaw. So this town that has fought through so much, who believes in themselves, who have such a passionate group of women who are strong and dedicated to their town, that we give them what they need to change their lives. So I want you to be proud of Veggie School. You guys did an amazing thing. You changed part of Guatemala, and it's not done yet. And that change is going to happen generation after generation after generation. We've done a good thing. So as you're hanging out with your friends today, say, well, I physically changed the size of people in Guatemala. What did you do this week? Folks, I just wanted to introduce you to Shankaw today and show you that we're winning. This thing is working. The part that you play, the water you take, we call this global water, it's working. We're beating the Guatemalan government, and I love winning. So let's win some more, can we? Over the next little while, you can check us out, friendchurch.ca/Guatemala, or you can go to the Guatemala team page on Facebook, see stuff that's going on. We'll start posting stuff over the next 6 months just to keep you guys in the loop of what's going on, who's there, stories, more stories from Jamie and Tyler. There's going to be a bunch of videos from me and Tanya. Just so you can feel these people, so it feels like they're part of our family. And just remember, we're changing the world. So have a great week. I'm going to pass it over to Ange. Next week, we're doing something different. Jody and I are going to talk a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about the interaction between stage 4 people and stage 2 people. That interaction often happens very poorly. So I want to invite you out to come check that out.